Hey everyone, welcome to Rebrand and our very first episode without the dynamic duo of Ben and Tim. This is Ben, you knew that. And I'm unfortunately without my assistant host, Tim Jones. We're in Charlotte, we're just halfway through the delayed 2020 General Conference happening in 2024. So we've been here for about 7 days, we're here for four more. And the next 4 days are going to be busier than the last seven several times over. In an attempt to keep as many of our Holston members as well as our growing, ever-growing Rebrand crowd in the loop, Tim has taken this episode off to do some written reporting. So you're stuck with just Ben. I know you're excited. This episode, I'm going to try to recap as much as I can the events and all the happenings of the General Conference thus far. To do that, I'm going to pull in some clips that I've recorded throughout the last week. A quick plug, though, if you want to stay totally up to date on all of this stuff, like within the hour, like within minutes, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and or YouTube. I mean, definitely and, all three of those. We have all kinds of highlights, clips, news articles, interviews, pictures, fun stuff, serious stuff, all the things across all of those channels. Facebook will be probably the most complete of all of those, but really you can't go wrong on any of those platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching for Rebrand Podcast on any of those platforms. And look for that purple speech bubble that you've come to know and love. Okay, so let's start by laying out the main areas of work where we came into General Conference prepared to work on. There are really three of these, and these three have really defined the conversation leading up to General Conference. So here's a clip of mine from last week where I talk about the three R's. With General Conference now upon us, a coalition of over 270 U.S. delegates are rallying around three key legislative proposals aimed at shaping the future of our church. These proposals, known as the three R's, regionalization, the revised social principles, and the removal of exclusionary language against LGBTQ people, are seen as a new foundation for dialogue and inclusivity within the church. After the contentious 2019 conference, and the challenges posed by the COVID pandemic, these delegates are advocating for a different kind of assembly, one that focuses on healing and unity. They envision a church that embraces diverse theological perspectives and cultural contexts, with regional bodies empowered to adapt church policies to better fit their local needs. The worldwide regionalization would create distinct governing bodies across Africa, Europe, the Philippines, and the U.S., promoting self-governance and allowing regions to thrive with the global church structure. Now, the revised social principles aim to reflect modern global concerns more succinctly, moving away from divisive language and towards more inclusive church dialogue. Most notably, the proposal to remove language that excludes LGBTQ people from full participation marks a pivotal shift towards embracing all members as the church seeks to eliminate causes for past friction. As General Conference approaches, these U.S. delegates remain hopeful, urging fellow Methodists to join in their vision of a more united, Christ-centered church. This is a pivotal moment for the United Methodist Church as it seeks to reconcile its past and forge a new path forward. So I think it's valuable to start here, kind of framing the work of General Conference in this way with these three R's, because these three R's were set by a group of 270 plus, by the end, I think it was well more than that, U.S. delegates who represent a progressive view. They are the progressive wing of our denomination. And I would say the general sense coming into this General Conference, and perhaps thus far while we've been here, is an optimism by those who represent that progressive viewpoint on the work here at General Conference. And so if I'm trying to frame what General Conference is looking like right now, I think that it is a story of the progressive wing of our denomination advocating for these three R's and seeing quite a bit of success in their work here thus far. Now, certainly there's some opposition, and that opposition comes from the U.S., but I would say more of that will come from the central conferences across Africa, certainly, and then also the Philippines and Europe. So now I want to look at each of those three R's and what has work has already been done, what decisions perhaps have been made, or what direction those tend to be going in. Once we do that, I will break down day by day some of the action and events that took place on each day. And once we get into those daily pieces, that's where I'll be able to share some clips from sermons by our bishops and some of the different reports that were given on stage. But first, let's go through the three R's. So the first R that really saw action was on regionalization. So the proposal for worldwide regionalization came up. And so this initiative aims to balance decision-making power across the church's global regions. Delegates have they've made significant strides here with the passage of a constitutional amendment to establish regional governing bodies. Each of those governing bodies will have the authority to adapt the Book of Discipline to better fit their local needs. However, while the General Conference has passed this amendment, it requires further ratification by 2/3 majority at the annual conference level globally. So that means 2/3 of all those voting across the General Conferences. So a true general vote, not 2/3 of conferences passing it. I know we got some questions about that. So that's kind of the last critical step that remains before this large structure change happens across the denomination. I want to play a video, or I'll just play the audio for you, obviously, from a clip that I recorded just immediately after these amendments were passed, that talks about some of the specifics of what the worldwide regionalization looks like and how that might change some of the structure that we're familiar with in our denomination, specifically here in the U.S. in the annual conference level. Another part on the regionalization amendment that has just passed here at the General Conference of the United Methodist Church. This time we'll look at what the denomination will look like once this amendment is fully passed, fully implemented, and then also we can look at some of the steps that remain before it's fully adopted. So with the passing this regionalization amendment, the structures of the UMC is poised, they're poised for a significant change. Each regional conference, whether here in the U.S. or in Africa, Europe, or the Philippines, will soon have the authority to adapt the Book of Discipline to better meet missional needs and legal contexts. This marks a shift from the current model where only central conferences possess this authority. Under this new system, regional conferences will have the power to establish their own disciplinary provisions and church structures. This includes setting educational and qualification standards for clergy, adopting specific standards for lay membership, and even publishing regional hymns and rituals for ceremonies like marriage and burials. These adaptations will need to align with the core doctrine of the United Methodist Church, that doesn't change, and comply with local laws, ensuring that regional practices reflect both our global identity and their local realities. The amendment also empowers annual conferences within these regions to develop structures that best support their specific missions, while maintaining the essential structures mandated by the General Conference. This decentralization is designed to foster greater effectiveness and responsiveness to local church needs. So though the General Conference has approved the amendment with, by the way, a 78% majority vote, the process is not yet complete. For full adoption, the amendment must now be ratified by at least 2/3 of the total vote of annual conference lay and clergy voters. So this next phase is crucial, as it requires widespread agreement across the denomination's global network of conferences, each with its own unique context and challenges. Looking ahead, the successful implementation of this amendment could truly redefine the United Methodist Church as a global denomination with localized governance. This could enhance unity while respecting diversity across our worldwide congregation. The coming months will be a critical period as we wait to see if annual conferences affirm this historic change. All right, so the next R that we saw some action on here at General Conference was the revised social principles. Now, a couple weeks ago, I got to sit down with, well, okay, over Zoom, but we were both sitting. Actually, that's not true. John, I think John was standing. I got to have a conversation with John Hill, who is a friend of mine. He's also the outgoing interim general secretary for the General Board of Church and Society. What a title. Some of you may remember I got to go to Dubai to do some work with the General Board of Church and Society last year, and he led the delegation that was there. So I got to catch up with him. But anyway, if you are unfamiliar with the work of the General Board of Church and Society, GBCS, or with the social principles, I highly encourage you to go to our YouTube, search Rebrand Podcast, look for the purple bubble, and watch some or all of that conversation with John Hill. It's not very long. You should check it out. But I'm not going to give you any clips from that because you can go and watch that yourself. But basically, the social principles are a group of statements which define the social beliefs, the social principles of our denomination. So they talk all about access to healthcare, food, protection of civilians, of women and children, all some of the basic human rights that we believe should be available to all people, and some of the social justice and advocacy stances that our denomination takes. This is a living document of sorts, as I suppose everything is in our discipline and Book of Resolutions, but the way it has happened, the social principles have been amended over time. Each conference, they're amended to be changed, and so over time, that language has gotten at times at odds with different sections inside the social principles. At times, it's clunky, or John talks about it as a patchwork of language, and there's some beauty in that, but also it sometimes makes it harder to work with. And so what has happened now and what is being voted on at this general conference is a full rewrite of the social principles. So from the ground up, they have spent really the last 12 years looking at what the church believes and what our stances are on a whole range of social issues and advocacy points. And so this new revised social principles is a reflection of a 12-year process to come to this point. So I think it's a really great place to ground our social justice work and to really communicate what it is our church stands for. So with that, I again, one more time, I'm going to recommend that you go watch the interview with John Hill. But as far as where we are so far with the revised social principles, the delegates have approved multiple petitions that aim to update all of these things, the church's social witness to be more globally relevant and theologically sound and consistent. It's notable, though, that these revisions include removal of references to homosexuality, which has been really the defining source of division within the church for the last several conferences, but even going all the way back to 1972. This change is part of a broader effort to address international concerns on a variety of issues to be more inclusive. These principles have been adopted now at the conference, making a significant shift towards a more welcoming and diverse church doctrine. So To be clear, there isn't any language affirming homosexuality in the revised social principles, but the significant change in this area is that there is no reference to homosexuality or human sexuality in general now in the new revised social principles. And a majority of those social principles have now been passed by the general body. So the third and final R in the three R's here is the removal of exclusionary language. Now, this is the big one, right? This is the one that our denomination has been struggling with and has been the source of so much pain.